in association with Newsarama. Welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. I'm sure a lot of Wildstorm fans know this fact. Top 10 is back. The series is two issues into their new story arc, written by an original member of the art team, Xander Cannon, and drawn by series regular Gene Ha. On this edition of Word Balloon, we talk with Gene as he runs down many behind-the-scenes details of Season 2 of Top 10. Plus, we'll take a detailed look at a preview page that he provided us of Issue number 3. You can see that page at our website, wordballoon.com, and, of course, at newsarama.com in the accompanying article with the podcast. Comparing the writing styles of the series creator and current writer, Gene reminds us that Xander was providing layouts and inks for the first 12 issues in Top 10 and was Moritz artist on the follow-up Smacks miniseries. We also talk about Gene's Eisner-winning turn on Justice League of America, number 11, with writer Brad Meltzer. And Gene lays out his convention schedule for the upcoming season, along with other interesting anecdotes. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by Vexile. From Funimation Entertainment. Get ready for some cyberpunk. Vexile, the two-disc special edition, is available now on DVD and Blu-ray. From the creators of Appleseed comes a CG anime movie about the dangers of cutting-edge science of robotic biotech. Geek Magazine calls Vexile balls-to-the-wall action. In the battle between man and machine, humanity stands to suffer most. Check out 30 minutes of clips from the movie at Funimation.com/Vexile. That's V-E-X-I-L-L-E. Vexile, the two-disc special edition, available now on DVD and Blu-ray from Funimation Entertainment. Our conversation with Gene Ha begins with a look at an upcoming page from the third issue of Top 10 Season 2. If you'd like to follow along to know about the scenes that we're talking about, you can check out the page at newsarama.com and, of course, our website, wordballoon.com. And Gene tells us about the various Easter eggs that he has placed in the scene. I recognize Newt Gingrich with glasses. Am I correct?
Yeah, I started off putting in politicians to that page because I was thinking, I want to draw some really bad hair, and I was trying to think of who has bad hair, and I just thought, every politician I see in an ad anywhere. So I began throwing them in, and then, it just got to be fun, and then I thought, okay, who can I throw in as a superhero or supervillain politician? I thought, Newt.
Oh, definitely. I don't know if you want that known or not.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Okay,
well, they're public figures, so they're the least able to sue of anybody. So
that's true. They're public figures. Is it a politician with the mink, the like elongated man kind of looking guy?
Oh yeah, the AK mink is short for the Alaska mink, which is I think his name is Representative Don Young of Alaska.
Okay.
Who once threatened another Congress member that he'd something like bite his throat and hold on like an Alaska mink.
Because I was going to say, the only two I can think of are Sarah Palin and Ted Stevens. So, and I thought, it might be Ted Stevens, but all right, there you go. Now, this is a good education. Let's see, who else? All right, now I know I'm guessing up on top there, and you actually tipped me off when we were discussing things, that one of the masked guys in the first panel is Rod Blagojevich, the governor of Illinois.
Yes, he is.
Excellent. And as go ahead.
I need to get the pages out myself. Okay, hold on a second. I think this is the issue we're talking. Okay, third issue. Yeah. I should mention I don't have a copy of the printed second issue because I haven't got my free copies yet at my local comic store.
Oh, man.
Sold out.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great. There's a great problem.
Yeah. So, kind of good, but I still haven't seen it. So everyone else has.
You'll eventually get your comp box, though, right? And it'll be in there?
Yeah, I should. Actually, I should get a pile of maybe 10, 20 copies just for myself, too. So
that's true. Okay. So who is in front of Blagojevich there?
I can't remember. I think he's like a Kentucky senator who I've never... I just thought he kind of looked right. But, I mean, you can't tell much from the costume, but he's essentially has a costume for Cannonball of the New Mutants.
Okay, very cool. That's
awesome. And I just
thought
I'd throw someone from Kentucky or Tennessee in there, so...
Well, and I didn't know what to expect reading the first two issues, and the talk was, obviously, that... Is it... I never know how to say this name, and I should because it's based on, assuming, a Greek mythological character. Is it Perigne? How do you say her name? The winged...
Peregrine.
Peregrine, thank you. Okay, see, there we go. So Peregrine and her husband are having marital issues.
Yeah.
He's got a few cross-dressing issues, which I think is hilarious. And they're going to Origin Weekend, which is the basis of this page that will be up on Newsarama for people listening in and don't know what we're talking about. There is a reference. And I'll have it, too, at the website at wordballoon.com. So if you get the show normally from iTunes... Either go to the Word Balloon website or go to Newsarama, and this page will be up there, and you'll know exactly what we're talking about. But I was dying because, I was wondering what Origin Weekend would be, and it sounds like it's kind of a Promise Keepers kind of,
yeah, they call it Premise Keepers. And the funny thing is that, I mean, when Xander wrote this, I thought it was a big riff on all these relaunches that every character goes through. And he did not, he called it Origin Weekend, and he didn't see that at all.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, but wait a minute, it's like a perfect metaphor. It's like you're making fun of all of these guys who do these horrible relaunches.
Absolutely.
Like, no, I was just trying to make fun of the Promise Keepers.
That's that's fantastic. You know, I honestly, I'm not being nice. Xander is doing an amazing job because we all know what kind of tough act Alan Moore is to follow. The meta stories are there. The characterization is there. I mean, and the layers of different stories that are going on. I mean, it really is. Everyone who's loved the original Wildstorm series and the 49ers should be very pleased because right now the tone is there and we're getting another great top 10 story.
I will say there was no hesitation on the part of Wildstorm to have us work on it. It was just a matter of getting this, my schedule clear so I could actually draw the script. Xander's been done for over a year, I think, with the last issue even.
Wow.
Yeah, script and layout, so it just was a matter of me getting around to doing it. I should mention, I'm not sure if you've noticed it, but, okay, Xander actually sent me a reference for the main buildings. That's actually the big giant complex that the Marvel heroes use instead of Secret Wars.
Oh, that's great.
And I kind of found those boring to draw, so if you look behind that, there's a familiar extension built off of that from the real world.
Well, it looks like the Enola. It looks like the bomb from the Enola Gay. Am I wrong? Is that an atom bomb or?
Oh no!
Or
like
a hydrogen bomb?
No. On the left side of the building.
Oh. Okay.
With the little triangular support trusses.
Okay. That's San Diego. Yeah, that's the San Diego. The San Diego Convention Center. Fantastic. Okay, because I was looking at the. Am I right? Isn't that a bomb above it? On the right of the panel.
No, that's actually just kind of a weird random structure that. They had inside, well, maybe that's what it was originally inside of Secret Wars, but I don't know.
Okay. Jesus, that's awesome, man. Honestly, and there we go. Again, just tons of Easter eggs again in the new Top 10 series. And, so that's great. There really was no hesitation. It really was just your schedule being, affording you guys the time to do it. I liked the Jerry Ordway, Paul DeFilippis story as well, but it was different in the same way that, like, Swamp Thing stories are different when Alan wasn't doing it. And this reminds me a lot of when Alan started writing Swamp Thing and Rick Veitch and John Tottlebaum and Steve Bissett kept going.
Yeah, I think I'm going to mispronounce the name, the Field Po issues mm-hmm. had kind of a goofier, more kind of silly kind of a,
yes.
I don't know what to call it. Like, it was much more of a conscious cultural pastiche than the rest of the series.
Okay.
I think Xander, let me see, I don't think he gets quite as kind of, well, I don't think he's quite as gritty as Alan is, and I don't think he gets, and obviously we can't quite be as innovative, or else we wouldn't be able to follow in the footsteps of Alan, but I think he actually has a little better at dialogue, because Alan has this tendency to actually describe the action in the dialogue, and Xander, trusts me enough so that, he, and kind of is conscious of that enough so that he doesn't do that himself.
Okay.
So I think the dialogue flows a little more easily inside when Xander's writing it, and now Alan's going to hate me forever.
Did you guys talk to Alan at all and just say, hey, this is what we're doing, just wanted to let you know, or you guys need his approval, but just in terms of letting him know, hey, this is what we're doing with the characters, what do you think, or whatever?
Well, it would have killed us and it still would kill us if he reads it and we find out that he hates it, but Xander did mail a copy of proposal for the series to Alan, and he never got a response back.
Oh, that's too bad.
But month after I started the series, I called up Alan to ask about a different question, and then he mentioned how much he enjoyed reading the proposal.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that was very heartening.
Very, very cool. No, that's really great. And, people remember, and certainly from the graphic novel, that you and Alan, they think of you and Alan, but sometimes they might forget that Xander was the inker on the original series, and then, of course, also was the artist on the Smacks miniseries as well.
Yeah, it was actually, Xander's role inside the original series was really complex because he started off switching off being penciler and inker with me on the first, the second half of the first issue and then the second issue.
Then
after that, he was the layout guy. So he was actually essentially the first artist on the series before me after that.
I see. Well, and then once again, he is laying out these stories for you.
Oh, yeah.
And he and his brother are kind of Are they co-writing? Is that what's going on with Kevin?
Oh, actually, Kevin's not related to Xander at all.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, it's kind
that's
of
crazy. Because yeah, yes. Aren't they both in Minnesota and everything? And aren't they?
They're both in Minnesota. They both went to the same college and were the main cartoonist on the school newspaper. and they both started working together after Kevin graduated from college. And he began working in Xander's studio. But no, they're not related at all.
Oh, that's very funny. Two guys named Cannon.
Yeah.
And they what's the name of Xander's studio up in Minnesota? Do you know?
You know, it used to be called the Handicraft Guild. Then he began working inside of a different building. I don't know if he's still keeping that name anymore.
Oh, okay.
But it was an actual historical building called the Handicraft Guild, which I think is torn down finally. So
I see. Well, I know that Xander had been showing me the breakdowns for a while, like you say, even over a year. I remember when you guys were first talking about this, and mostly I was just checking in with either of you guys to see the status as it was being prepared every few months when I'd run into you guys at conventions. So it's great to see the finished product right now. How many issues is this first story?
I'm doing 4 issues, but they do have a new artist on board afterwards. I can't remember his name offhand because it's Chinese.
Okay.
But it will be continuing after me.
Have you seen his art?
I have. It's there's kind of a it's very cute. It's got a strong kind of well, it's kind of got that Asian manga type of influence to it, but it's I'm going to get very detailed here. It's much more Hong Kong than Japanese.
Okay.
Therefore, it has a lot more realism and anatomy to it. I will say that Girl One is much cuter and prettier when he draws her.
Okay. Dude, I was surprised. And tell me if this is true, because I wanted to refresh my memory with some of the characters. And looking up Wikipedia, is it true that Girl One was based on Sung Hae Lee? Is that absolutely true?
Oh, based on who?
Sung Hae Lee, the little glamour model that's so gorgeous?
Oh, geez. You know, actually, there was a specific woman I found online who I based the face on. I can't remember what her name was, but it was a pop star.
Okay.
And I actually forgot that was true, and I was like, oh, geez, now that I'm drawing her, I should try to figure out who that was again so I can look up new pictures.
Because Girl 2 doesn't look like as much to me like Sung Hae Lee.
No.
And I'd have to go back and look at the old issues to see if Girl 1 did.
Yeah, actually, well, I should say that my wife actually pointed that out to me, too. It's like, Girl 2 looks like a slightly different person. I was like, well, she is a different person.
Right,
I'm
she's
not
a different
too
model.
About it.
Yeah.
Her physique is a little more feminine. Her, I'm trying to think. I think her breasts are drawn a little bit differently. Her eyes are a little bit are a lot different. And her jawline isn't nearly as square as before.
Who among the current cast are you enjoying drawing? If there are any particular favorites, or it doesn't matter, you're just happy to be doing the book again?
I don't know. I end up drawing a huge amount of Dust Devil, it seems.
Okay.
So I'm actually enjoying drawing that quite a bit. I'm also enjoying the fact that as much as I miss some of the costumes, having the standard uniform is a lot easier than a lot of the costumes that you did used to have to draw.
Sure.
The one thing I really, really miss is drawing Smacks and Girl One.
I was going to ask about that because I think a lot of people might be disappointed that they're not part of this story.
Yeah, they'll be back after I leave, but that's not going to help me.
That's too bad, man.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I actually did a huge amount of work trying to figure out a new costume for Girl One because I thought she looks, you know, she looked very, very much late 90s, and I wanted to kind of update her for the present decade. So I did things like I was going through fashion magazines, and I was taking photographs of random strangers saying, hey, your hair looks exactly like what I need for a comic book character. Do you mind if I take a photograph with my phone? So I saved up all these photos and all these little sketches and ideas over the years, and then when I finally get a chance to do it, she's not in the series.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, oof. Was that tough? I should ask Xander that when we eventually talk as well, in terms of having to follow what happened in Beyond the Farthest Precinct.
I mean, the trick there is that it's set directly after the first series that Alan Moore wrote, and 4 years before Beyond the Furthest Precinct.
Oh, okay, because I was wondering about that.
Yeah, and I think actually Xander started working on this before Beyond the Furthest Precinct got printed. So
that's
I mean,
good.
You know, he began plotting out and all that type of stuff. So there's actually some weird overlaps in the plot, like there's a new commissioner inside of each series.
Yes.
Actually, I think the commissioner inside of the Top Ten series might end up being a running joke, like the drummer inside of Spinal Tap. Yeah, you should tell that to Xander. Or I should mention to Xander, just like you know, every few issues, they should just kill off the commissioner.
I love the design. Or just the plot device that the commissioner doesn't want to leave his dimension and his home world, and he's got this this clunky robotic body that he's just kind of, you know, imposing himself in as opposed to actually physically being there, and is this kind of ghost in the machine. I think that's really, it's a great design.
As a pop culture thing, it's a reference to the Spider Killer robot that J. Jonah Jameson used to have, or yeah. It's called Spider Slayer robot.
I remember that, absolutely.
Yeah, and if you look at the original layouts, Xander actually draws it looking like that, but there's two reasons why we didn't do that. One is that major characters, especially ones with dialogue, I try to redesign enough so they don't look at all like the original character that they're a riff off of.
Okay.
And the second thing is that inside of the very little scene ABC A to Z short story, young Jetman is actually arresting the Spider Slayer robot inside of one scene.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize that. That's fantastic. And yeah, you know, Jetman, Captain Trainer, I love that guy. I really do. And then maybe because I was such an Airboy fan when Eclipse brought him back. And I loved his role in the 49ers as well, and really learning his backstory was really amazing. And actually a pretty bold story as well. That's what I love about this series in particular. You've got the trappings of the police procedural, but really all these characters are really out there and have such interesting human frailties. And I think that really does, it's just a really cool combination that makes for entertaining reading.
Yeah, I mean, in the original series, part of it was just that Alan Moore is a person who really, really just loves just talking to people. He just loves hearing their stories. And, you know, I mean, he'll just wander around some crime-ridden area of London or something like that and just start chatting with random crooks. And when I say that, I mean, like, gangsters. You know,
oh, really?
Gangsters who will cut your throat, you know, if they're bored, just for the, you know, to get rid of boredom, and they'll just start talking to them.
Wow. Well, I, you know, like I said, I think Xander's kind of picked up, and we've got some interesting mysteries going on. You've got the mass murders happening right outside of the precinct in the reflective pool, and that just overlooks their Hall of Justice kind of headquarters. And then you got the kind of, you know, kids that are being influenced by a wizard and apparently getting kind of Captain Marvel-like powers. And I loved the interrogation of kind of the old wizard that was just hanging out on the corner. I thought that was a pretty good little nod in Chapter 2. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, he's a very fun recurring. I'm hoping he's going to be a recurring character. He shows up in Issue 3 again, too.
He's got a little Mordru in him, is that fair to say? The old Legion of Superheroes wizard?
You know, when a character has a lot of speaking parts, I try to not make it too obvious where I got the design from.
Sure.
In his case, though, he's almost a direct ripoff of a non-magical character. He's Angar the Screamer. So I hope
Fantastic.
No Marvel lawyers are listening to this podcast.
I understand. Are you, you know, how would you characterize yourself, Gene? Do you think you're more, I mean, everyone, you know, when they were growing up, they had one company in mind. And it's like you can't be an Elvis fan and a Beatles fan, as Uma Thurman points out in Pulp Fiction. So, I mean, were you a Marvel kid growing up, or were you a DC kid?
Mostly Marvel.
Yeah.
There's one specific artist at DC, Mike Grell, when I was growing up.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, who I just totally worship. But if he wasn't on a DC book, I just wasn't interested. But then as time went by, DC and Marvel just kind of mixed things up more and more, and I just, you know, my attention began wandering. Essentially, I began following talent more and more as I got older, too. So it didn't matter what the company was, what the book was. I would just start following the creators I liked. So if Frank Miller went somewhere, or John Byrne went somewhere, or Matt Wagner, I would follow whatever they did.
That's cool. And have you had the opportunity to meeting everybody? I mean, I know for a fact that we hung out with Matt Wagner and had a lovely breakfast in Orlando a couple years ago. So obviously you're pals with Matt, so.
Yeah, and he's a great guy to hang around with. And
you
I'm
bet.
Dying to have, I've been hearing about what a great cook he is for years, so I'm just dying to try something he cooked. I haven't had a chance to really hang out with John Byrne over the years.
Okay.
But I'd be really interested to, but let me see, I'm trying to think of who else. Oh, you know, the other thing is I've never actually hung out with Alan Moore.
Really?
Yeah, I've exchanged letters and phone calls with him. I've met his wife in person. I'm Facebook buddies with his daughter, but yeah, I've never met him.
Well, I'm looking forward to. I hope you get the chance to meet him and see him face to face. I mean, you guys are amazing collaborators, and you guys have cranked out some great stories. I mean, you know, you think about the Eisners. Have you got two Eisners now, or is it more than two?
I've got three Eisners.
Three Eisners. Are two of them involving Top Ten, or?
Let me see. I got one for Top Ten, one for 49ers, and then one for JLA.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, I assumed that you had gotten one for the original series, and then, of course, the one for the 49ers. I mean, that's what I love about this series. There were five issues of Beyond the Farthest Precinct, there were 12 issues of Top 10, and there was the one graphic novel. So this is like the 19th issue of Top 10, and it's such a dense read, and you really feel like you know these characters as a reader. And I'm thrilled that the book is back, and I'm glad that the book will continue. I imagine it might be too early to predict when you'll be able to get back to the series, but is that in the cards that eventually you'll come back for another arc?
You know, if you go to that little scene story I mentioned before, ABC A to Z, mm-hmm. you'll see this double-page spread of Neapolis, where it's a view that's supposed to be a map of every major important building in the whole city.
Okay.
So it was a double-page spread that took me like 15 days to draw.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no extra pay for that. It's just this, in the script, the writer was just like, oh, yeah, and then, throw in a double-page spread of the whole city of Neapolis.
Jeez.
And if it wasn't for that one thing, I would probably still have enough energy to keep on drawing Neapolis cityscapes for the rest of my life, but, yeah, he kind of killed it. So, you know, if you see that writer in person, you know, get vengeance on him for my sake. I'm kidding, but no, not really.
All right, so you'll need to, I can understand. You got to walk away for a while. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, that was.
Well, at least we got you and Xander for these four issues, and we're going to savor him because I think that's excellent.
Yeah, I can mention I'll probably be ending. I'm in negotiations right now with Vertigo to doing a big project, but we'll, you know, there's a small chance it won't come through, but that's what to expect next.
Okay, very cool. And let's look back for a second and go back to I can't remember when the book actually came out now, but you won the Eisner for it this summer with Brad Meltzer. That wonderful issue of JLA, was it number 11?
Yeah.
And you know, I wondered, Gene, how much of it, as far as the design, came from Brad's script, or was it your idea? Because what an interesting story. For people who don't remember, this was Vixen and Red Arrow trapped in a mine, and there was a lot of darkness, and most of the panels were black with little peaks within the blackness of what was going on. Who figured that out for the art style for that?
Oh, that was all completely in the script. And I'll say that when I first read it, I talked to Brad and I said, I'm not sure if readers will be able to handle this. This is, you know, it's very claustrophobic and there's not a lot of drama as far as change in composition or size and stuff like that. And he's a very, very visual thinker. And he was able to say, no, try it out, just do the layouts and do it the way I say, and you'll see that it works. And I did it and I was like, you know what, he's right, it works.
Would you position the action in a specific part of what would have been a naked panel and then put the black all over it? I mean, is it how detailed were the panels underneath the black?
Let me see. Oh, well, the panels were actually, I mean, there was a lot of texturing and stuff like that. So even in areas that look kind of solid black, I still try to throw in, like, hints of little rock and stuff like that.
Sure.
The main struggle inside of figuring out the compositions was I had to put the heads, because they were narrow panels, you couldn't have crossing balloons, word balloon tails.
Right, okay.
So I had to lay out the head so that they spoke in proper order, but the few people are always standing in exactly the same position in the room throughout most of the story. So I had to do this little geometry problem of laying out the angle of the room and then trying to figure out a camera angle so the heads popped up in the right order across the panel. And then I just had to figure out other tricks of, like, for instance, if one character was having a very emotional moment and the other character is just reacting to it, then this person must be inside the foreground, that person must be in the background. So it was a huge geometry problem for me.
It was, I think, a great one-shot. That's rare these days. I mean, you know, I almost think artists, like writers, stand out more when there is that incredible one issue versus the usual six-issue or four-issue story arc.
I think I know what you mean about that. Definitely a, you know, kind of a one-off thing for Brad where he just really wanted to do something that kind of stood out from the other issues as a unique story. Just, you know, it's something, just a very bold visual storytelling experiment. And again, it was not something I had the boldness to do myself.
You always seem to be drawing a lot of big group books lately. Is there going to be an opportunity for you to kind of focus on one or two characters?
You know, I used to go through cycles like that where I'd get sick of drawing people in tights and I want to draw people instead of regular clothes, and I'd get sick of that and then want to draw people in tights again. But honestly, it's just I always have this hunger for drawing great stories. And if I like the writer, I really don't care what he's asking me to draw, except for giant double-page cityscapes of Neapolis. So.
Well, and I remember one story that you did a long time ago for a book that no longer exists called Marvel Double Shot, and you had a great Iron Fist story, and this is before Brubaker and Fraction brought him back to prominence and stuff, and I just remembered it was a cool little monster story that Iron Fist happened to be the hero in, and I thought that was a really neat thing.
I'll mention that was the first story where I was supposed to work with Bill Willingham, but he did his famous disappearing act a few days before the script was due, and the editor just told me, somebody's got to write it, Gene, and you're the only one left.
So you wrote that story. That's cool.
That's the only time I've written it.
Wow.
In every other case, I was able to find a better writer to write the story for me, so I didn't want to do it myself.
Do you envision a time where you'd like to write and draw another story coming, you know, at some point?
See, the only time that would happen is if I run out of good writers willing to work with me,
okay.
And I'm hoping I never get to that stage in my career.
That hasn't happened yet, so you're doing all right.
Yeah. I guess the other thing is that when it comes right down to it, I'm a very peculiar type of geek, and I don't necessarily geek out over what most of the other people geek out over, so I have trouble kind of predicting what gets other people excited or, frankly, what they've seen a million times before, because, you know, I don't necessarily see all the same movies and comics that everyone else reads and watches. So I'm not a good storyteller in that sense. It's very much like being a great chess player or being a great basketball player. If you don't know what the latest moves are and what everyone's doing, you can't outthink the people you're playing against. And a writer essentially is playing a game against the reader where he's trying to guess what they're expecting next,
sure.
And they're trying to surprise them.
What do you like to read? I've never asked you that. That's a good question.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of Bill Willingham.
Okay.
Let me see. What do I got right now? I just went to the comic shop, couldn't find my copy of Top Ten, but I grabbed a copy of the new Neil Gaiman's Sandman, The Dream Hunters, which confused me endlessly because it was like, I swear I've read this before, but I don't remember any of these drawings by P. Craig Russell before.
Well, yeah, it was. Wasn't it a short story originally?
Originally, it was done in storybook format with Amano. The same story was done with Amano. I can't remember his last name.
That's right. Yes, yes, yes. Because yeah. I interviewed Craig. It looks beautiful.
I should mention, he's one of the two artists where I own one of his signed socks.
Wow.
Yeah, and the other artist is Ryan Kelly of Local.
So. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so
that's there's both ends of the spectrum right there. I like Ryan Kelly too, man. Yeah, Brian Wood really found a great guy to work with on Local. I love that series. Big fan.
Yeah, so someday when I'm old and desperate for money, I'm going to sell these socks. Oh, and here in my studio, I also have I can't remember exactly the story behind this. I mean, I remember somehow it was a challenge to somebody to get something signed from all the artists from Studio Gaijin.
Uh huh.
And the guy decided to get a tampon signed by Adam Hughes, Cully Hamner, Carl Story, Ryan, you know, just all these guys from Studio. It's a signed tampon. I can't throw it away, but I can't show it to anybody.
Well, I can appreciate that. Yeah, really, I don't know how you display a tampon. That's a good point. Hey, but thank you very much for coming out to the Windy City Convention. I'm really glad you were able to come.
It was great fun. It was a great little con.
Yeah, you know, I think it turned out really well for people who, I know we talked about it a little bit on the show. I don't think I've mentioned how well it went. We had like 1,500 people paid show up, and I think there were another few hundred that were comped. But it was a nice little one-day show in the city, and I know it was successful enough that I think you can count on it happening again next year. So hopefully it'll fit in your schedule, and I think you'll be able to, if you're able to show up again, I know a lot of people will appreciate it. Did you do a lot of sketches? I know you were working with the Hero Initiative.
Oh, yeah.
And
did
a bunch.
Yeah, I think I did one or two paid sketches. No, I did one paid sketch that day, just for me to kind of, you know, essentially pay for the day and stuff like that and my expenses. And then just the rest of the day, I just did, like, I think it was eight or something sketches for the Hero Initiative to raise money for them. So, yeah,
that's
I kept
cool.
very busy.
Excellent. You did a great Golden Age Superman for me.
Which
I truly appreciated. I'd like to see you do more Golden Age stuff. And, I mean, that's one of the cool things about Top Ten, because I think a lot of the designs have that retro look to them, certainly. But I would really love to see you do an Invader story or a Justice Society story, for example, or even, you know, what they're doing over at Dynamite and stuff. Who knows, you know? So.
Yeah, so hopefully some of this will work out. I mean, we'll mention that also. I'm hoping eventually to do more creator-owned stuff with specific writers, but that stuff's really, really undeveloped, so I'm not sure where it's going to go, where it's going to get published, or even necessarily who I'm going to work with yet. So.
Okay. Very cool. What's coming up for you convention-wise?
I'm getting to go to Spain. I just got invited about a month ago to go to a small Spanish con in the Basque country of Spain.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's exciting.
Who else is going to be there, do you know?
Oh, Michael Golden and Arthur, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Arthur Sweetum.
Okay, yeah, I've heard Sweetum, and I've heard a million other pronunciations, but the guy who's been doing the wonderful covers for Marvel Zombies, also, of course, he had another 20 years of great cover art that he's done as well. I always laugh that Marvel called him one of their young guns. And it's like, who the hell are you kidding? I've got Savage Sword of Conan covers by him that are like, you know, almost as old as some of the kids that are reading nowadays. So that's very cool. That's excellent, man. Have you done many European cons?
I've done a few over the years. Actually, I've done a lot in Spain. I don't know why. I don't know if I'm like a huger, if I'm like just a bigger star inside of Spain than I am in France or Italy or something, but I've only been to one French con. I haven't been to any other, and then I've been to like three Spanish cons, so.
I can see your stuff fitting in well with the European crowd. I mean, it's sophisticated art. A friend of mine invited me to a concert tonight, and I said, no, I can't do it. I've got to do an interview for my podcast. And I said, I'm talking to an artist. And really, the first words I said was, I'm like, he's not a traditional comic book artist. I said, he really is a great painter that happens to be working in comics. And, you know, it's a very unique style, and it's a very adult style. And I don't mean in the X-rated sort of way, but no, it is. It's a sophisticated style, and it's a pleasure to see you tackle even, you know, the mainstream heroes, and Smax is a great hero that I've loved seeing you draw as I've waited in line for a sketch, and I'm always curious to see what you're working on, and especially the way you work convention sketches, because you are kind of painting. How describe it, because I'm always a knucklehead when it comes to describing art, Gene.
So
tell me what you're working in to make these sketches.
Well, lately I've been using mostly grayscale Copic markers.
Okay.
Again, another thing I'm not sure about the pronunciation. I've heard both. And I just I just use it a little bit like watercolor, and I usually work from light to dark and just kind of build up something that looks a little bit like a black and white photograph.
It's amazing. I mean, that's the thing. You're really getting a beautiful piece of art that isn't – it's not right to call it a sketch. I mean, it really does, as you say, it has that watercolor look to it and everything. And, it's always beautiful. So that's something to look forward to, folks. Are you going to be doing any American cons after the Spanish con?
Let me see. I'll probably be doing I'm definitely doing the Emerald City Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
Seattle. That'll be April.
Excellent. You're not going to New York in February?
No. Just between, like, panicking over the jumping airfares back when oil prices were going up and just really wanting to get my workout done on a regular basis, I decided to skip New York.
Well, plus it's Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, what? Oh, that's going to suck.
I know I'm going. I'm like, yeah, great, Super Bowl weekend. All right.
Okay, at least you won't have to worry about crowds.
That's true. Yeah, really, the airport will be easy that day. That's a good point.
Oh, I'm thinking the convention, too.
And yeah, really, Sunday's going to be a ghost town. That's all right. Wow. Well, you know, Newsarama, we're going to probably do a bunch of video interviews and stuff, so.
Yeah.
That's too bad, man. You would have been one of the people I would have hit up for a definite interview, so.
Hey, we're both local. It's not a big, you know, you can drive to my house. So.
That's true. that's a good point. We should do that sometime. You know, seriously, Gene, you should come out if you're able to. A lot of the Chicago artists, I'm sure you're aware, they get together on Wednesday nights at a couple places in the city and do a drink and draw.
Oh,
And you should really come sometime. Because
I should come. When I do come for the comics roundtables,
yes, the
luncheons. Generally with generally the 30 to 40 year old crowd who only get together every 3 or 4 months.
Sure,
because we're all old and cranky and live in the suburbs. So
I'm old and cranky and live in the suburbs. I know what you mean.
It's almost a sure bet that I'm going to the San Diego Comic Con.
Excellent.
And I'll actually be going to another Spanish con in July too. So two cons in July: Semana Negra in Spain and the San Diego Comic Con.
Wow, is Semana Negra the really big one? That's
I've never been to it before, but I mean, apparently it's a big multimedia event where it's like novelists and playwrights and comic artists all getting together for this huge, giant week of a celebration. Or actually, it's the 8th through the 19th, so I can't be there for the whole thing, but I mean, it goes for like, what is that, like
wow.
11 days.
Yeah, my God, that's really wild. I was going to ask, what is the, what are panels, do they do panels when you're at a show like that, or are you just sketching? I mean, is there a Q&A? What do they do?
You know, it's much more casual than an American convention. You kind of sit around, they usually just kind of show you around the city and give you huge amounts of free time.
That's great.
You do some sketching, but it's usually not for money. But on the other hand, the fans there never, ever sell them on eBay.
That's cool.
Yeah, they're very good about that. And it's just little tiny sketches usually. You'll do one or two panels, and otherwise it's just kind of like the city gets to meet you. You got to meet the city. They just show you around. I've met the mayor of two towns in Spain now. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? Isn't it amazing to be in countries where, you know, art is that important and that they really do treat artists like that? I think it's great.
Yeah, Spain's amazing too. It's just like they don't have a native Spanish comic book industry there really.
That's
but there's so many comic book artists coming out of that country.
Yeah.
There's so many fans there.
Wow. No, that's really crazy because yeah, I was thinking of, you know, a lot of the Spanish artists that did come from there that ended up working for American companies and stuff. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, otherwise they work for maybe French or Italian companies, or, you know, a lot of them are getting agents and working for American companies. So.
Okay. Have you worked at all on any European publishers?
I do have a little scheme where I might do it in the future after the Vertigo stuff. And the idea is that if I want to do a creator-owned thing, I'd this is going to get all legalese here a little bit, but
okay.
I'd have a European company paying my page rate and keeping the worldwide rights to publishing the comics, except for the English language rights.
Okay.
And I would retain that and the American movie rights.
That's great.
And so essentially I'd be able to draw whatever I want that's suitable for a European audience, so it wouldn't necessarily have to be as action-packed or superhero-oriented.
Sure,
it could be,
sure.
You know, if it would be fine with them. But also I'd be able to publish here the way I wanted to, and if a movie deal comes out of it from Hollywood, I get all the money, or most of the money. If a European movie deal comes forward, I just get the normal European deal on that. So.
Okay. That's cool. That's fantastic. You know, it's interesting. I've heard from other artists as well that with some of these European publishers, it is like, yeah, you know, when you get it done, great.
Part of the idea with the European publishing is that the first issue, their first album, doesn't usually sell that well. But what happens is that as you build up more and more readers over time, they begin buying the back issues. So every time a new album comes out, sales jump on the first original issue.
I see.
The original album. And, you know, they'll start to having numbers like 10 million copies of a single series or something like that.
Wow. That's fantastic. Jesus.
Yeah. I remember when I was in Paris, I stepped out of the train station, and in the bus shelter, there was a huge ad for a new graphic novel. And it was bragging about how popular the series was and how it had been selling millions of copies.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The only foreign bookstores that I've been in, comic stores, was when I was in Amsterdam. I did go to a comic book store, and I was just blown away by Belgian comics. And I mean, they had everything. They had Italian comics, they had Belgian comics, and they had American comics as well. And it was great seeing all the different genres represented and just the different art styles. I missed when DC briefly was running the what's the name of the
Humanoids?
Thank you, Humanoids. Yeah. Exactly. It was such a pleasure seeing all the different styles, and I know that Rebellion, I think, has taken over since, and they have American distribution and stuff. It just doesn't seem to hit the stores the way that DC obviously was able to kind of penetrate and stuff, and so that's been my introduction briefly into a lot of different European styles. What are your favorite non-U.S. Styles of art?
Let me see. Well, I'll just mention from way back when, of course, there's like Akira, but
sure.
Not a huge amount of Japanese stuff. I can enjoy it, but I'm not necessarily a fan of it.
Okay.
But there's Akira and Katsuhiro Otomo, and the other one I recently really enjoyed was Death Note, who's, I can't remember the names of the creators at all.
Okay.
But I just thought the drawing in that was fantastic, and the story was not insulting to my mind, to my brain. It just didn't hurt my brain that way. Let me see. I made friends in France with a European artist, and I'm horrible, horrible with names, and the fact that he got a French name. I can probably reference it later, like in an email or something like that.
But okay.
He did this wonderful thing, and it was set inside of a very Western version of Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay.
So everyone was wearing cowboy hats, but it was, you know, it was 1800s Providence, Rhode Island.
In the East, yeah. That's
kind of weird. Yeah, you know, it's America, it's 1800s. But it was beautifully done. It was really beautifully painted.
That's cool. That sounds great.
Let me see. And I don't know. I always have trouble just naming things off the top of my head that I'm reading and trying to remember which one's which. But
no worries.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. Well, listen, we can wrap up, and I'll say that so far, two issues in, top 10 is great, as great as it ever was, and I'm happy for you and Xander. I'm sorry that you'll be leaving with issue 4, And maybe after you've rested a while, you might eventually someday come back, you know, and hopefully the series will go on and then have continued success. I'm pleased, like I said, I think Xander's writing a great story, and again, you're drawing a wonderful story as well. So look forward to hearing what comes of the Vertigo project. I hope that works out, and we'll look forward to a good 2009. You had a great 2008, and picked up some hardware for your effort, which I think is well-deserved, and I'm sure more awards and great projects are coming for Gene Haas, so thanks for joining me.
Oh, hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and when I do finalize whatever's going on with Vertigo, I'll try to let you be one of the first people to know.
Excellent, man. We'll talk about it then.
Okay, thanks, John.
That's artist Gene Haas. Keep checking out Top 10 Season 2. It's back on the racks for Wildstorm. Two issues are currently out. Issue 3 coming out the first week of December. And, of course, reach back and check out in Brad Meltzer's Justice League of America collection that specific issue that Gene drew. It was issue 11 that awarded them both the Eisner. This edition of Word Balloon is brought to you by Devil May Cry, the anime series. Complete volumes 1, 2, and 3 available now on DVD from Funimation Entertainment. To Dante, it's more than just a game. Cursed by his half-monstrous, half-human nature, Dante must spend his life fighting the forces of darkness and demons. Big ones, sly ones, crafty ones, and sexy ones. Everyone knows demons come in all shapes and sizes, and somebody's got to send them back to hell. And Dante's all too happy to do it, especially if there's money involved. Check out Devil May Cry, the anime series. You can get the complete series, volumes 1, 2, and 3, available now on DVD. And check out some action clips and trailers at Funimation.com/Devil May Cry. Devil May Cry, available now on DVD from Funimation Entertainment. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress reminding you, Word Balloon is all over the internet. Of course, we've got our own home space, wordballoon.com, where you can find over 175 different interviews with comic creators. And, of course, you can check out the other sites to find Word Balloon. We're at iTunes, at myspace.com/wordballoon, comicspace.com/wordballoon. Any questions or comments about the show, we have a forum at wordballoon.com that you can access to, or you can write me a direct email if you want. john@wordballoon.com is my email address. So thanks for listening. More interviews coming up in November. In the meantime, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2008.